Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
And if you happen to be someone who has founded a business, perhaps shared some interesting concepts and ideas, and are looking to rally some support from your shareholders, this is a conversation that you want to pay attention to. Whenever we talk about corporate rewards or remuneration strategies, even how to go about finding the right talent to lead a business, we have our go-to person from AMROP Woodburn Mann. That's the managing director of the organization, Andrew Woodburn, who joins us now on the show to give us some context into a fascinating headline that caught everyone's attention last week. Elon Musk. Yep. To some of us, he's the young man from Pretoria who found glory, fame and fortune in the US, so much so that to some extent he's influenced policies within the White House. Beyond that, he's also influenced the view that his shareholders have of the value he gives to his business, Tesla. That's as shareholders have approved a $1 trillion pay package, the largest payout ever awarded to a corporate leader. And yes, there are certain conditions that Elon Musk needs to meet, but really, he's already one of the richest men in the world. To give him a $1 trillion payout, this is an interesting dynamic, and I'm quite keen to understand how Elon Musk does it so that the rest of us can learn too. Andrew Woodburn, such a pleasure to have you with us, and thank you for your patience.
Good evening. Gugu, and to the listeners, and we were just talking about trading and the JSE and Alt2X and so on, and and here we have a man who, if he gets it right, would be rewarded probably with more money than a small country runs on.
Exactly. And that's the fact that blows my mind. I get it. You know, the truth is, if people could and you were allowed to, you could actually buy some countries just given the billions that the super wealthy are worth. But Elon Musk and his engagement with shareholders and essentially the approval of this particular pay package. Let's just start there. The kind of engagements that might be nuanced or unique to Tesla that see them having these kind of high-level engagements regarding an increase in his salary.
Yeah. So, look, the first thing about Elon and Tesla in itself, without even getting to SpaceX and Twitter and all the other things that he runs and owns, right, is that he occupies the founder seat. And when there's a founder in play, it doesn't always mean the traditional frameworks are complied with, because the nomination committee didn't necessarily go on a search using a firm like mine and find a good CEO and then offer to bring him in and do it all in what we would call the normal process, right? You had the innovator, the founder, who in many cases took extreme risk earlier on in the life of the business. And then, as the chairperson said, you know, really becomes intimate in the future of the business. Mm. And this is the position Elon holds. And so certainly the board see him as being, for example, the magic that's made Tesla, right? Yeah. Now, the real question was, how much is that worth? Well, at the end of the day, actually, the shareholders were asked to decide. And so there was some talk about, you know, flawed governance processes and so on, 2018 and 2019 and so on. But essentially, the same offer is back again. And the first thing our listeners need to understand is Elon is not going to have a salary of $1 trillion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's not what we're discussing here, right? So I wanted to actually say, in preparing for the discussion with you, Gugu, this is not an unknown methodology. We in South Africa, and certainly I know of at least two, if not more, individuals in our own economy who followed this model. And in general, it does pay, believe it or not, the shareholders more than the CEO. So it's not guaranteed, as no investment is guaranteed. All your great investment and wealth advisors will always tell you, if you go on the markets, just remember, you've got sometimes as much chance of losing money as you have of getting money. But I'm going to share with you that I was exposed, in fact, to a guy called Leon Kakinis, who started African Bank. He was the founder. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I'll go even better. I'll go to Koos Becker, actually the founder and builder of the global Naspers, aka now Prosus, right? And in fact, both of those individuals, for Mr. Kisvetter's purposes, about 15 years ago, were actually getting a salary of in the region of 350,000 rand a year.
Which would be modest for any JSE listed CEO.
You can hardly send two children to private school for that per year. And I'll tell you, because I did want to draw a parallel for your listeners, that about 15 years ago, 350,000 Rand would buy you the very first BMW X5. So I think it came to the market at roughly 350 to 450,000 Rand to buy a new car. And Koos Becker, if I recall, and Leon Kakenis were getting paid just that per year. And everything else they made was attached to the equity allotments they had and their ability to drive certain measurables linked to those shares. And of course, that would deliver the multiplier in personal worth and value to the CEO. And thank you very much. Any other shareholder happy to ride those coattails?
Got you.
So the shareholders love this when the multiplier is working. And of course, it's not so lovely if things aren't going according to plan. But this is truly a person who's putting themselves out there to say, you know, I'm going to deliver these things. And if I don't deliver them, because you've got to read the fine print, if I don't deliver them, or I only deliver a portion of them, then I either will get none of it, or I will only get probably a pro rata portion of the amount of equity that's on the table for me.
Got you.
And the relative value. So is $1 trillion a lot of money? Hell yes. You and I would agree with that. But actually, versus Koos Becker and others, I think the founders of FirstRand actually also used this model in the early days. Actually, based on inflation and the world becoming a more expensive place, actually the numerics are not necessarily that critical. The real question is what drives Elon? And the chairman alluded to this, right? Now, you can only pay someone so much money, after which you probably have the private jets and the island and so on and so on and so on. And then one's got to ask yourself, well, why would you get up in the morning? Because if you have everything that the money you have can buy, what's driving you? So we know at a base psychology level for executives that there's only really a derivative or one of the following three. There is power, there is money, and there is recognition. It's one of those three, or a slight combination of them. Now, we know that Elon has the money, so he doesn't really need to earn the trillion. In fact, he's got private money that he can buy and sell companies himself, right? And probably, as we said, small countries if he was so desirous. The recognition is on TV. Trump called him in, you know, to try and sort out the government of the USA and so on. So he's highly recognized. So in fact, the critical thing to know in this transaction is it's all about power. And if you read again the fine print from the analysts, you'll realize that if all this comes off, in fact, his equity share will be worth in the region of 25% or more of the total value of Tesla in this instance. And what that does is it actually gives him what I call founder power. He becomes the most significant individual in the ownership of the firm.
And still,
so even if the market wants to do other things, or investors are saying we don't want to go here, we want to go there, what it actually does is if he pulls this off over 10 years, I might add, this is not a 1 year engagement, this is a 10-year deal. Then what happens is he actually becomes the owner, almost in minority rights terms, of Tesla, which is his business. So he probably used the markets to fund the growth of the business. He's performed against various numerics that the market has been expecting him to deliver against. He's got paid, he's got rewarded. But really, I would say the real reason for this is that he wants to basically take back the most significant portion of equity in that company, and therefore be able to drive the company down a direction as the founder that he would like to see it go.
Got you.
And so it's a lot of money, but I'm not sure he's doing it for the money. He's doing it for the for the ability to take back the significant control of that business in the future.
You've given us such a beautiful journey in the explanation of understanding the local connection and examples that we can refer to. And it's gone good and bad if you consider Leon Kakenis at African Bank and, of course, Koos Becker at Naspers and the outcomes there. But also an understanding of how there's a psychology to this in terms of collating the math. And that's what actually works for shareholders. Andrew, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick ad break, but there's so much more I want to get into after this particular conversation or after the ad break, specifically taking a look at the shareholder approval and, of course, the targets and objectives that he has ahead of him for the next 10 years and typically how these kind of deals are structured to ensure that the strategy is implemented, support is there, and the growth is there for all shareholders. And, you know, what happens in the worst case scenario? It's one thing when there's upside to the power that Elon Musk might seek, but there's also a challenge where that might be lost if the market dynamics and the strategy isn't implemented accordingly. So we're going to take a quick breather as it is 22 minutes after 7 o'clock. We will come back with our conversation talking about Tesla shareholders approving a pay package, not a salary, a pay package of up to $1 trillion for Elon Musk at Tesla. Andrew Woodburn, Managing Director at Amrop Woodburn, man, I'm getting tongue-tied today, joining us, and we'll talk to him.
It's the trillion that's distracting you.
It is. So many zeros. So that's certainly gotten me confused. But we will be back shortly. It is 23 minutes after 7 o'clock.
Show us the money.
Kaya Biz.
On the street.
On the air.
24 minutes after 7 o'clock, you're listening to Kaya Biz here on Kaya 959. We're continuing an intriguing conversation that we're having with Andrew Woodburn, Managing Director at Amrop Woodburn Man, joining us tonight to help us contextualize a approval of a pay package for Elon Musk, the founder of Tesla. 75% of these shareholders voted in favor of this unprecedented pay plan, which could essentially see Elon Musk earn $1 trillion. Now, as Andrew's mentioned, it's not a salary. It really is incentives to make sure that from an equity point of view, ownership, stock, shares that he has in the business. And subsequently, if the share price rises and the stock market price rises, it adds as a benefit to the valuation that Elon Musk will have, which could potentially go up to $1 trillion. One key theme that you highlighted before we went to break, Andrew, was the fact that this is not something that is unusual, but there are two sides to it. It can either work incredibly well and Elon Musk can walk smiling all the way to the bank, probably buy a couple of banks if he wanted to on the back of this deal. But there are also times when things just don't work out favorably, where, as we saw with Leon Kirkenes, it's at points in time, sometimes CEOs become so desperate to find growth and power to actually drive the growth in that share price for the shareholders, but also for themselves, that they might actually find ways that are not necessarily compliant with the law or unscrupulous or not common business practice to drive profits in an entity. And Leon Kirkenes, we saw what happened with African Bank, which then needed to be rescued and spun off into two different divisions that were saved, and another bad bank, which was actually disposed of. But I'm quite keen to understand, you know, what the outlook is or the risks involved together with the opportunities with a pay package like this.
Yeah, so the critics have been vocal about, first of all, the scale. But I think we've unpacked that a little bit, that of course the number's significant. But honestly, if we go back in the U.S. tech markets and look at Steve Jobs and look at Bill Gates, because Elon sits in that kind of founder framework, right? You know, Bill, I think, has been more philanthropic with his wealth and with his wife. Of course, Steve is no longer with us at Apple, but we all probably carry one, or I think one in every two people carry one in their pocket.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So these individuals have changed the world. And the relative value, you know, you don't hear people today criticizing them that they were paid whatever they were paid, right? And I think Elon's track record has delivered against the fact that, one, he can grow value, because we know he's already, you know, if not the world's richest man, and certainly in the top three, number one. So his track record stands on itself. But I think what the board truly see here is that he is the cornerstone of the innovation, i.e. the products that they at this point don't even have.
Gotcha.
And that's where the future value sits. And that's what his package is going to be linked to. So what they're going to do is they're going to link his package to market-based metrics such as turnover, market value, volume produced. We've talked, you know, if you read the press around this, you'll see about robotics, robo-taxis, humanoids, whatever that might be, you know, and so on. And so I think they're betting on as yet undelivered product lines, and you know, how long is a piece of string, right? We don't know what those are worth at this point in time. We've got a view from looking at NVIDIA and DeepSeek and other AI-based companies that have certainly rocketed in value.
Yeah.
So they're betting on that with Elon. They're seeing him as a cornerstone. He's involved and material to both his personal well-being. I remember I said about this power position of wanting to take control of the business back. But it doesn't mean that he's able to take undue risk. And it doesn't mean that he's just able to do what he likes.
Mm-hmm.
This business, and probably for all of us listening who have some form of pension fund somewhere that has a little bit of offshore exposure, you know, it's highly likely that some of our little rands from this little corner of the African planet is actually sitting in Tesla and maybe some of his other companies, right?
Yeah.
And so the real question is, we don't want him to be a cowboy, and that's where the governance comes in. So the board will always be exposed, and he will present to the board what his plans are doing. He will have to convince them that the amount invested in these new products and in the current products is worth the return. So far, he's been pretty good at that. And therefore, there are checks and balances to ensure that he gets there. Now, what you don't see in any of this reporting is that if he completely goes off the rails, two things will happen. Number one, his own personal wealth will suffer because the value of the share will drop. And we saw that a little bit when he was playing one foot in politics.
Yes.
We saw, therefore, that there was a link to the Tesla share price. The second thing that is not written anywhere is the board still has the right to dismiss him. And therefore, he might lose everything if he becomes so extreme that the board feel that the risks he's proposing and the results that he's delivering, if they're nowhere near what's expected, you know, the board will remove him. So a board still has the power of governance to ensure that what's been proposed is sane, and that he needs to persuade them that his ideas and what he wants to do is workable. And then, of course, they're tracking, and certainly in the US, maybe a little more than our market, they are absolutely tracking quarterly results and, you know, portions rather than just year on year. So at this point, my view is that I think it's probably a reasonably sane idea. And certainly 75%+ of shareholders did vote for this package over a 10-year process. And I will end, because it's 7:30, Gugu, on the final statement. If you are a shareholder and you don't like it, you can always sell and leave.
You've got flexibility. As long as the share, the stock is still liquid, right? Because if Elon even has to own more of it, that's a whole nother challenge. But
100%. And there will be others in the world who would like your shares.
Yeah.
So I think at this point, it's a tradable equity. And honestly, if you feel that this is something that is beyond your comprehension, reality, or risk appetite, or investment horizon, then sell it and go and put your money somewhere else. And that's the wonder of the free market.
Yeah.
Where you have choices, and now, you know, there's global markets. We were talking about the JSE earlier and A2X, but actually the Reserve Bank allows us citizens to put some of our money anywhere in the world, and you don't have to be in this share. You can choose other shares that are more appropriate for the appetite you would like your money to sit in.
Andrew, this has been such an invigorating conversation, and I appreciate that you've also schooled us on understanding that this is nothing new. And the interesting theme that you've highlighted as well is when a business is founder-led, there's a lot of innovative ideas, a lot of IP that actually sits within the mind of the founder that can still influence the growth trajectory of that particular business. So it makes sense in markets where there's still a lot of innovation and growth, such as what we see with Tesla right now, and as has been seen with the examples you alluded to locally in South Africa, specifically when it comes to the likes of Naspers. I will be intrigued to see how this continues to play out in the AI space, especially given the heightened focus on those companies in the US. Thank you again for your time, Andrew.
Always a pleasure, Gugu. Have a wonderful evening to you and your listeners.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Please say hi to my co-presenter there who made an appearance.
Next time, I will too.
We'll have you both in studio again.
Wonderful. Good evening.
Take care. That's Andrew Woodburn, Managing Director of Amrop Woodburn Man, helping us contextualize the pay package that has been proposed by 75% of Tesla shareholders. And as you would know, we speak to Andrew very often around anything to do with executive remuneration, the selection of CEOs, the process of actually hiring them, but also the interesting nuances that actually go into high leadership negotiations, the remuneration packages, and also holding them accountable to the strategies that they have to implement to make their companies profitable. So these are just a few of the themes that we've discussed. And as you've heard, Elon Musk, he's not earning a salary worth $1 trillion, but it is a pay package. Bear in mind, it's over a 10-year period, and there are very specific targets and objectives that he needs to meet that essentially produce new products for the company, drive increased profitability and new revenue markets, and that in itself will then translate to a scorecard. If he ticks it off, he just might get the R1 trillion pay package. If not, unforeseen consequences will exist. But interesting times that we certainly live in South Africa.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.